So I've been working on my authorization service, and it's totally sweet. It's only taken me 6 months to build it. Just 6 months. I started implementing some basic RBAC library, but that wasn't enough, obviously. So I designed relationship-based fine-grained authorization for the highest security possible. And then, to make it super fast, I used a GPU tower, running in my mom's basement, of course, connected via optic cable to bare metal server at my local esports lounge, permissions, restrictions, and admin. Nailed it.
Wait. Whatever you did sounds cool, but like, there's also another option.
Oh, really?
Yeah, with permit.io. Permit is the full-stack authorization platform created so you never have to build permissions again. Build and manage permissions for any application with policy as code, APIs, developer-friendly SDKs, and user-facing UIs. Permit is an end-to-end authorization platform built on top of open-source policy engines. It's high-performing, gets decisions in less than 10 milliseconds, and uses a hybrid approach where config is in the cloud, but data and decisions are made locally. Not only is it intuitive, it lets you implement fully functional authorization in 5 minutes, not 6 months, and in the code base you prefer. Check out the link in the show notes or go to permit.io to learn more. That's permit.io. Sign up for Permit and stop rebuilding auth.
We had everyone cold calling basically for the first 3 months after launching the product, and cold calling people and trying to ask for feedback on our platform. Here's the concept. Is it something you'd be interested in? If it's not, what would you be interested in? Trust me, doing that isn't the best use of time because you're going to get a lot of no's and you're going to spend a lot of time dialing. But the amount that you can learn by trying to battle test your product and not just living in a world of your own imagination, but living in the world of your customer's imagination, right? That's really valuable. And that is time well spent. My name is Luke Hyankopoulos, and I'm the CEO and co-founder of Grapevine Technologies.
This is Code Story, a podcast bringing you interviews with tech visionaries.
Spent 6 months moonlighting.
There's nothing at the back end.
Who share what it takes to change an industry.
I don't exactly know what
to do next.
Took
many goes to get right.
Who built the teams that have their back.
The company is its people.
The teams help each other achieve.
Most proud of our team.
Keeping scalability top of mind.
All that infrastructure was a pain.
Yes, we've been fighting it as we grow.
Total waste of time. The stories you don't read in the headlines.
It's not an easy thing to achieve, mind
you. Took it off the shelf and dusted it off and tried it again.
To ride the ups and downs of the startup life.
You need to really
it's
want it.
It's not just about technology.
All this and more on Code Story.
I'm your host, Noah Labhart, and today, how Luca Yankopoulos is giving medical professionals a new way to buy supplies by building the kayak for things they need. This episode is sponsored by Kiteworks. Legacy-managed file transfer tools lack proper security, putting sensitive data at risk. With Kiteworks MFT, companies can send automated or ad hoc files in a fully integrated, highly secure manner. The solution is FedRAMP moderate authorized by the Department of Defense and has been so since 2017. Step into the future of secure managed file transfer with Kiteworks. Visit kiteworks.com to get started. This episode is sponsored by ClearQuery. ClearQuery is the analytics for humans platform. With their full suite of features, you can go from data ingestion to automated insights seamlessly. With Ask ClearQuery, you can find valuable insights into your data using plain English. Don't miss the opportunity to simplify your data analytics with ClearQuery. Get started today at clearquery.io/codestory. Luca Yankopoulos lives in New York City and believes wholeheartedly in doing well by doing good. He grew up in the early 2000s where the focal point was environmentalism and doing good in the world. He is an active botanist, and though there isn't much soil to toil in New York City, he spends his weekends filling the planter boxes with plants on his block and around the neighborhood. For Luca, COVID caused immediate awareness of supply chain issues. He and his buddies kicked over stones around these problems, specifically in the medical supply chain, and discovered a whole list of things needing to be addressed to support medical professionals in their buying. This is the creation story of Grapevine.
We got started building this back when I was still in college, and we were inspired to build this and get involved in the medical supply chain, which I didn't know much about at the time, because people we cared about, my co-founders, my roommates, my college friends, people we cared about were frontline heroes during a crazy and scary event, which was the COVID pandemic. And we didn't know where it was going, but we did know a couple ways we could help out. So we got involved as a response, an emotional response, really, to protect people that we cared about and provide value to those who needed it at a time that they needed it. Now, a lot has changed, obviously, since those times, but there still are very broken components in these healthcare supply chain systems that existed long before the start of the pandemic and have persisted long since things have wound down. So we've been able to find our groove there, look into those problems, and continuously try to solve those problems in a digestible and seamless way for healthcare workers and healthcare businesses.
Tell me about the MVP, so that first version of the product you built. How long did it take to build, and what sort of tools were you using to bring it to life?
The first version of the product that we built was, I'll be the first to admit, we overbuilt. I've since and even then thought I was adopting the agile mentality, but it's really hard to build a really perfect, tailored solution for a broad audience. And we were focusing on just that, a very broad audience. Healthcare is diverse. There's different medical specialties. There's different players and different business models. And when we're trying to provide value to all of those businesses, all those healthcare practices at once, it felt like we were getting pulled in too many directions to provide exceptional value to a smaller group of people. So honing in on a smaller audience, about a year after we started building it, we were able to launch. We were able to see ourselves getting pulled in different directions. And we decided to focus on a smaller group of people, specifically in like dermatology, ambulatory surgical, oncology, sort of medical specialties, and smaller businesses of less than 1,000 employees, not huge healthcare institutes. And by doing this, we were really able to see better patterns, more clear patterns in people's behavior, in their needs, in their issues. By seeing that, we were more guided towards a more consistent and uniform solution that was able to help those people in a greater way. So we release new versions of our platform every 2 weeks, and we're constantly integrating and calibrating towards the needs of our customers.
Okay, so let's stay on the MVP for just a minute. When you're building any sort of MVP, you got to make certain decisions and trade-offs. And you know, I can kind of, you're alluding to some at a high level. I can kind of maybe extract them from what you've said. Maybe dive into one or two or one of your favorites and some of the you know, decisions that you had to make. And I'm curious about those decisions and how you coped with making them.
I think that as entrepreneurs, it's something that we all share where we're stupidly confident in thinking we understand what the world needs or where the world is going next. When it comes to building an MVP or launching a product or raising money, we really are buying into that dream. But no matter how smart you are, it is very difficult to predict exactly where things are going to be in 3 months, 6 months, a year, what laws might change. It's important to not overinvest. It's important to build something, an MVP, as you're calling it, that is light, that you can get in the hands of real people and see if it delivers the value you dream of delivering. When we launched our MVP, we definitely made sacrifices, right? We didn't invest in hours or months of perfecting the design components, making a very scalable, perfectly well-built foundation or solution. And in ways, those might be considered mistakes, but I think those are our advantages. You could spend years making the perfect first version of your web application, of your machine, whatever it is that you're trying to make. You won't really know if it's a perfect fit for the market until you get it in the hands of the people that you're trying to help and you get their feedback and whatnot. So building a real MVP, building something that isn't structurally and scalably perfect, something that isn't in every click, every design, every response element perfect. These are important trade-offs you need to make. You need to sacrifice perfection for just getting something out there, because when you throw it against the wall, that's when you see how the wall hits back. We've learned a lot more about what we should be building and who we're, you know, solving problems for by getting an MVP out there into the hands of real people and keeping our ear to the wall than you ever could learn in market research or from a distance experiments or anything like that.
This episode is sponsored by CashFly. The web is a competitive place, and if your site delivers its content pixelated, slow, or not at all, well, then you lose. But that's where CashFly comes in. CashFly delivers rich media content up to 159% faster than other major CDNs. Through ultra-low latency streaming, lightning-fast gaming, and optimized mobile content, the company offers a variety of benefits. For over 20 years, CashFly has held a track record for high-performing, ultra-reliable content delivery. While competitors call themselves fast or use cute animal names, only CashFly holds the record of being the fastest and serves customers like Adobe, the NFL, or Roblox, where content is created by users and must be delivered in real time. For the first time ever, Code Story listeners can get a 5 terabyte CDN for free. Yep, you heard that right, free. Learn more at cashfly.com/codestory. That's cachefly.com/codestory. This episode is sponsored by Kiteworks. Legacy managed file transfer tools are dated and lack the security that today's remote workforce demands. Companies that continue relying on outdated technology put their sensitive data at risk. And that's where Kiteworks comes in. Kiteworks MFT is absolutely the most secure MFT on the market today. It has been FedRAMP moderate authorized by the Department of Defense since 2017. Through FedRAMP, Kiteworks level of security compliance provides a fast route to CMMC compliance, saving customers time, effort, and money. Kiteworks MFT makes it easy for users to send automated or ad hoc files via fully integrated shared folders and email. Administrators can manage policies in a unified console and create custom integrations using their API. Did we mention it's secure? The level of security with Kiteworks solution is rare to find. Step into the future of secure managed file transfer with Kiteworks. Visit kiteworks.com to get started. That's kiteworks.com. So then you've got the MVP. It's working. You're starting to progress and mature the product. I'm curious about how you went about that process. And to wrap that in a box a little bit, what I'm looking for is, how do you build your roadmap? How do you go about deciding, okay, this is the next most important thing to build or to address for Grapevine?
We understood that the roadmap, 2 weeks out, 1 month out, it's pretty clear and we're going to stick to it. But 2 months out, 6 months out, 12 months out, we're going to have a plan, but we're going to see how well that plan stands the test. And we were okay with having that sort of 3 month, 6 month, 12 month plan evolve and go in several different directions. So our roadmap looked more like a branching sort of network of options, right? We know where we are today, we know where we're immediately going, but the longer future is undetermined yet, and it's going to rely on good productive feedback from our initial users. We really needed to listen to our customers. Of course, building in ways to watch how they use the application, integrating with the sort of third-party platforms like Sentry that can actually watch your users as they perform specific key functions and let you watch game tape replays, if you will, and see how they use the app. Them not hitting the button that you think they would obviously hit next, right? Not achieving what you think is value, but finding something else special, a little pearl in what you've built. So game tape replays is a huge part of that. But I think an even bigger part of it is just trying to get your product out there, right? We tried to get our product, our software platform in the hands of a few hundred different people. And the way that we did that is everyone at my company, from myself, the CEO, all the way down to our salespeople or our data management people, we had everyone cold calling basically for the first 3 months after launching the product, and cold calling people and trying to ask for feedback on our platform. Here's the concept. Is it something you'd be interested in? If it's not, what would you be interested in? How could we work with you? And trust me, doing that isn't the best use of time, because you're going to get a lot of no's and you're going to spend a lot of time dialing. But the amount that you can learn by trying to battle test your product and not just living in a world of your own imagination, but living in the world of your customer's imagination, right? That's really valuable. And that is time well spent. So getting your product out there, listening, keeping an ear to the wall, and listening to the response, the feedback, the needs of the people that you're actually building for, and then reconfiguring your compass to go in the right direction for the people that actually matter and will use your product. Those are all parts of our agile and post MVP development of our product roadmap.
Now, here you're saying we. How did you go about building your team? And what did you look for in those people to indicate that they're the winning horses to join you?
The first 10 or so employees were all people I knew and trusted from different walks of life. From best friends in middle school to college research thesis partners, these are people that I had worked with on different types of projects and accomplished what I considered to be great things. I knew where we worked well together and where we might butt heads. And having people that can trust, people that can get behind a shared belief and a shared mission, I think that's the most important thing. Obviously, finding sort of specialized skill players to fit into your picture where your team might be missing, where you want to go in a direction that you don't yet know how to go. These are things that we've since recruited talent for. Employees numbers 10 through 25 were not necessarily friends, but having that foundation of people that can pick you up, that group of friends that can pick you up and keep you motivated when you have self-doubt and keep pushing you to find something new, and people that you can really trust whose intentions are good and aligned. That's important, and it's something that's hard to find just through the hiring process. It's something that can come, in my experience, really just from friends. When you're hiring someone cold who you don't know, it can be a bit of a luck of a draw, and you might not end up in the right place.
This episode is sponsored by Cachefly. The web is a competitive place, and if your site delivers its content pixelated, slow, or not at all, well, then you lose. But that's where Cachefly comes in. Cachefly delivers rich media content up to 159% faster than other major CDNs. Through ultra-low latency streaming, lightning-fast gaming, and optimized mobile content, the company offers a variety of benefits. For over 20 years, Cachefly has held a track record for high-performing, ultra-reliable content delivery. While competitors call themselves fast or use cute animal names, only Cachefly holds the record of being the fastest and serves customers like Adobe, the NFL, or Roblox, where content is created by users and must be delivered in real time. For the first time ever, Code Story listeners can get a 5 TB CDN for free. Yep, you heard that right, free. Learn more at cachefly.com/codestory. That's cachefly.com/codestory. Hello, welcome to the Data Analytics Club. Do you know the password? No, I didn't know there was one. Do you know how to code? No. Do you know how to query data? Like, ask a question? I guess not. I see. Then you can't be in this club. Sorry, goodbye. Don't be left out of the Analytics Club. ClearQuery is the analytics for humans platform. With their full suite of features, you can go from data ingestion to automated insights seamlessly. ClearQuery provides you with the information you need without requiring you to do the heavy lifting. Their Ask ClearQuery feature allows you to ask questions in plain English, helping you find relationships and connections in your data that may have previously gone unnoticed. You can even visualize your data with presentation mode, taking your data storytelling to the next level. Pricing is based on storage, not licenses, and that ensures that you get the most bang for your buck. Don't miss the opportunity to simplify data analytics, your data analytics, with ClearQuery. Get started today at clearquery.io/codestory. Let's talk about scalability. This will be interesting. Did you build this to scale efficiently from day one with scale in mind? That could be technology or people, really. Or is there anywhere you've been fighting this as you've grown?
Under this whole agile mentality of don't overbuild, don't overinvest in something, we definitely took shortcuts when it came to scalability. We definitely left many rough edges in both the tech perspective and the team perspective, right? some things, right? We would build out processes for business development or data entry managers to carry out that we knew wouldn't be scalable, but we knew we could replace with technology if we decided to build that. But it could be maybe a 2-week or a 4-week project, and we weren't sure we wanted to invest all of our developers behind that. So we put a guy or two on it, carrying out a process that could eventually be automated. I think fighting sort of your failures in early scalability isn't the worst thing. It gives you the opportunity to create more like miniature MVPs rather than building them perfectly scalable from the start. And from a tech perspective, yeah, we have issues. Even to this date, we've got issues with the platform not being perfectly scalable. We need to do some big sort of refactors on different parts of the web application to make things more scalable. We reached a point at one point earlier end of 2023 where we had doubled basically the usage of our platform 3 months in a row, and things started breaking at the seams. We had memory leaks. Our servers couldn't handle the operations that we were asking them to handle. We had too many users for our own good, and we had to bottleneck it. But we were only able to get to the point of having users and having a product that was spreading through user referral because we built something unscalable in the first place. If we had built it perfectly scalable, it could have taken us years to get to that point. So I'm pro building non-scalable things as long as you take time to reflect and make those essential components scalable when the time is right and when you're confident enough.
As you step out on the balcony and you look across all that you've built, what are you most proud of?
Nothing's more gratifying than having customers that won't stop talking about Grapevine. We've got really loyal customers that have become obsessed with our platform. They won't stop referring other people, and that's why we now have a wait list of users bigger than the users who live in the Grapevine universe, right? We're talking about saving healthcare businesses more than 50% on their medical supply spend, making the experience, in order to save things, you'd think you have to do more work, but no, they do less work than they normally do today. We give time back to the employees that normally carry out sort of office administrative duties and shopping and price comparing and restocking inventory for the supply cabinet. By really putting the customer at the forefront of everything we do, we develop these relationships with guys like Dr. Joshua Weiss, who posts on LinkedIn on a weekly basis about Grapevine, calling us an oasis in a desert of rising medical supplies. So I'm most proud of having customers that believe in Grapevine as much, if not more, than our co-founders here at Grapevine do, that benefit from Grapevine by saving hundreds of thousands of dollars, which then are pushed back into increasing the quality of patient care. So I feel like this is one of those things where not only am I and our company helping other people, helping good people, helping doctors save money and feel good and feel excited about what Grapevine can do for them, but furthermore, we're making a better patient experience for everyone like yourself, Noah, myself, right? We're all patients at the end of the day. And if we can put money back into these healthcare businesses' pockets, that money gets put towards their customers and towards patients like you and me to get a higher quality of patient care, to get better odds when we get sick, and to have just a brighter healthcare future. I think this healthcare industry is one of the most broken in the of all industries in the United States, and it's really great to be a part of the solution here.
Let's flip the script a little bit. Tell me about a mistake you made and how you and your team responded to it.
The vein of the conversation that we've been having, we definitely overbuilt our MVP. After getting funding, it took us almost a year to actually launch our software product, and that was a major mistake, right? We overbuilt, we were overly confident in what we were building, and probably 60% of what we built in that MVP was a software package, a suite of features that wouldn't ultimately be used by our primary users today. We did it because we thought we understood the market better than we did. We thought that people were more similar across the market than they ended up being. And we didn't really have a product market fit. I think that we found resolve in that overbuild by adopting this agile framework, by focusing less on making everything scalable and just what is important, focusing on a smaller group of customers. I read a book, it's a Peter Thiel book called Zero to One. And they talk about in the early stages of PayPal, they were focusing on like a very broad audience, and they needed to focus on a really smaller audience. So according to the sort of PayPal mafia's mentality, your initial target market shouldn't be more than, I think it's 3,000, maybe it's 10,000 potential users, right? And when we're talking about almost any industry, especially in a funding world, like you're forced to talk about bigger numbers than 3,000 or 10,000 businesses. For PayPal, it was, I think, 3,000 reporters, news reporters who were using BlackBerries. That was their initial target market, right? So how do you come up with something so specific that there's only 3,000 of them in the United States? And trying to do that, trying to find a smaller, more similar niche to focus on, and then really be taking attention to the way they use your application, the way they benefit from it, the problems that they continue to have in spite of it, that allowed us to move away from this overbuilding mentality and know-it-all mentality and more of a beginner's mind approach to seeing each day as if it's day one, understanding the problems that our customers face, and really focusing on just building solutions.
Okay, this will be fun. Luca, what does the future look like for your product and for your team?
My dream for our product and my dream for the healthcare industry can be measured a couple different ways. So today, users link their existing suppliers of the thousands of medical supplies they need with the click of a button, which allows Grapevine to actively read in their historic spend and the current offerings from their vendor network. So basically, it's like a one-of-a-kind shopping center built exclusively for that one healthcare business with every relevant offering from all of their suppliers now on a single screen. So it's not like we've created a marketplace. We've just created a shopping center for you and your team. And we also can introduce you to new vendors, maybe the suppliers of your suppliers, right, who are upstream and can offer you the same products at a lower price. By doing this, we're lowering healthcare businesses' spend by, in some cases, up to 80%. And oftentimes without even changing the product that they're buying, just by purchasing it from the best source and preventing sort of bad quarters. The direction that we're going, I think, is going to look very different. We need to push towards eliminating the need for shopping altogether. People shop right now to make sure things are in stock. When it's a consumer like you or me, no, we might shop for joy or pleasure, to get something nice or to get a gift for someone that we care about, right? This type of shopping is different. This is shopping, like I said, thousands of unique items, the same items every single week, and price shopping, looking across different websites or portals or suppliers to see who's offering the best price at any given time. So our goal is to eliminate shopping altogether and to get people, get healthcare practices and businesses to a point of doing that effortlessly and seamlessly, all while they save more than 50% on their current spend. So to measure the future, by the dollars, right now in the United States, we're spending $600 billion a year on medical supplies and pharmaceuticals. I think that by 2030, we can cut that to $300 billion a year. To have an emotional impact, I think that, yeah, doctors and nurses, yeah, for an experiential impact, what does the future look like? Doctors and nurses won't think about supplies ever again. They won't have to shop supplies, and they'll confidently have everything they need in stock in their supply cabinets when they need it. There won't be shortages, there won't be stockouts, and there certainly won't be this overpaying for pricing.
Luca, let's switch to you. Who influences the way that you work? Name a person or many persons or something you look up to and why.
My number one sort of role model or idol would probably be my father. My dad is a Greek immigrant to the United States. He grew up poor in the Bronx and in Queens of New York City during some harder times when the city wasn't as clean as it is today. He pushed through that and beat the odds and worked very hard, always doing things the right way, and really taught me that you do well by doing good, that if we are going to reach success in this free capitalist country that is America, we need to deliver value to real people. We need to solve problems for people that recognize they have problems and show them a better path. And by doing well unto the world, you can do well for yourself. He's probably my greatest source of inspiration and my role model, and also one of my best friends. And when I'm looking to remotivate myself, he's the person that I'll go to and that I'll talk to. He's always putting the pressure of our ancestors and the past generations that had life much harder than I did to give me the opportunity to live today. And it's a debt and a responsibility that I owe to make the world a better place.
Luca, last question. So you're getting on a plane and you're sitting next to a young entrepreneur who's built the next big thing. They're jazzed about it. They can't wait to show it off to the world and can't wait to show it off to you right there on the plane. What advice do you give that person, having gone down this road a bit?
I got this concept. I call it 11:59 p.m. I think that a lot of people fear the future, as people, even myself, right? And I'm an entrepreneur that's supposedly taking a look behind the curtain, seeing into the future and trying to bring people towards that future. But people, even myself, we fear that the future may hold us irrelevant or lost or forgotten. We're scared of technological advancements like AI and whatnot. So how do you help people embrace the future? I think it's this concept of 11:59 p.m. Change is scary and many people are terrified of what the future holds. That's why you need to take your customers or your target market to the edge of today, to 11:59. At that point, Grapevine, we take your hand, or as any entrepreneur, you should take the hand of your customers and you leap with them into tomorrow. What does it mean to be today? Understand what your customer did before you, without you. Know the habits they formed and the comforts they have found in their existing way. And how do you engineer for 11:59? Understand the habits, understand why you need to preserve some of what they do today to help them feel comfortable stepping into tomorrow, some of what they did long before you. And then midnight, when you present your customer a gift from the future, a gift that is tomorrow, they will accept that gift and learn to love it if you can bring them to 11:59, because at 11:59, the jump to tomorrow is just another silly minute away.
That's really cool and fantastic advice. Well, Luca, thank you for being on the show today, and thank you for telling the creation story of Grapevine.
Thanks, Noah.
And this concludes another chapter of Code Story. Code Story is hosted and produced by Noah Labhart. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or the podcasting app of your choice. And when you get a chance, leave us a review. Both things help us out tremendously. And thanks again for listening.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.